what they're funding. They're cutting the programs that bring life. They're funding programs that bring more death and more deportation and more destruction. Either way you look at it, this is a great, big, ugly, deadly, bad, destructive, disabling bill. And we have to stand against it in every way. No one can be on the side, especially moral leaders, pastors and clergy, imams and rabbis who pastor and care for the people, because we, particularly those in congregation leaders, will bury the people, will have to be with the families that whose lives will be cut short because of this great, big, ugly, deadly, destructive, disabilitating bill that they're trying to push through. And lastly, Juan,
we have 30 seconds.
I don't know what's in the mind of people that you get up in the morning. What kind of mythology has gotten a hold of your mind that all you can figure out to do with power is how many people you can hurt, how many lives you can put at risk, how many lives you can destroy, how much bad policy. It is a sickness. And those of us who've not been bound by that sickness, it's time that we have to stand up in this moment.
Bishop William Barber, president at Repairers of the Breach, founding director of the Center for Public Theology and Public Policy at Yale Divinity School, also national co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. Thanks so much for being with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Last week on Capitol Hill, police arrested more than 24 people, including many disability rights activists, as they protested Republican plans to gut Medicaid and other programs for the poor and working class to help cover the cost of $4.5 trillion in tax breaks for the rich. Protesters lined the halls outside a meeting of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, while inside, a demonstrator was led away by police after disrupting the hearing.
You will kill me.
Security wheeled this protester in her wheelchair out of the congressional hearing. For more, I want to bring into this conversation Julie Farrar, an activist with ADAPT, a disability rights group, who joined some 90 people from her group in disrupting the congressional hearing over Trump's new proposed budget bill. Welcome to Democracy Now! Julie, first describe your gravest concerns right now as the House met through the night to try to get this bill passed.
Well, I just want to say that it is an honor to be on with Reverend Barber and echo what he said. This big, beautiful bill for billionaires is going to kill people. We are putting ADAPT has been around for 44 years, and we fought for the expansion of rights for disabled people, for people who are aging into disability. So, in the 90s, I crawled up the steps to the Capitol to get the Americans with Disabilities Act passed. I was able to go to school because of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And now, instead of fighting to expand the right to live in the community and fight for better wages for our home care workers, a large percentage of our home care workers are immigrant, older immigrant women of color. And make no mistake, President Trump is going after immigrants. He's going after immigrants, period. And so when we're putting our bodies on the line, it's because our bodies are on the line. Cuts to Medicaid in this already very fragile spider web is not a safety net. It's a spider web of services. ADAPT is fighting for affordable, accessible housing and Medicaid and services, fully funding those, and livable wages for our home care workers. And all of these are under attack right now. It's just appalling that they are literally stealing money from poor people's pockets to pay for billionaires' rockets. And Elon Musk is the largest recipient of welfare. Make no mistake, we have to rely on this very fragile web of services. So if our benefits are effective, our Social Security goes up by $6, then our rent can go up by $12, or we can lose the ability to live in low-income housing. We can lose Medicaid. With disabled people, we're putting our lives on the line because we know that our lives are on the line. There were 26 people in there that were arrested, and that woman was not with ADAPT, but she is now. She's from Ohio. We connected, and she's looking at starting an ADAPT chapter there. And we do believe that one of the tools in social justice that is very effective is direct action. So we're putting our bodies on the line because it is our lives that are going to be affected. I know people that are going to die without their home care services. As this budget cuts Medicaid and puts caps on how much money can be spent, and then also punishes states that actually have been carrying the red states with the taxes that we pay, but punishing states that states that will not implement these ridiculous immigration acts, those states are going to be punished by money, by the federal money that is spent on Medicaid and other programs. That money is going to be taken away, and that is going to hurt programs. Like, we have a program called Money Follows the Person that helps people get out of nursing homes and into the community. That is our fight. We hear so much about grandma's going to be thrown out of the nursing home. ADAPT is all about keeping grandma at home, that to make sure that she has the services that she needs to remain in her community and age in place. And all of these services are going to be affected. Housing is going to be affected. The energy assistance program and those green energy projects, those helped a lot of poor and disabled people be able to stay in their homes. And
Julie, if I can ask you also, the bill would require more frequent income and work verifications to qualify for Medicaid. How will these changes affect especially people with disabilities?
The easiest way to describe what is going to happen to the majority of people is it's going to be attrition from the program, because now instead of me having to prove that I'm disabled, I was born missing 12 vertebrae, I can pray and I can take vitamins, and I am still going to be disabled. So every 6 months I have to prove that I'm disabled enough to qualify for Medicaid. If you are receiving long-term care services, whether it's in a nursing home or in your own home, and also wheelchairs and all of our medical equipment, the only payer for those are Medicaid and Medicare, period. And when these cuts go into place, it is just ludicrous, because you have outdated federal computer systems, and then you have outdated state computer systems, and then you have outdated county computer systems, and they're going to have to communicate with each other, and they're not going to be able to. And people are going to fall off because they haven't qualified. They haven't turned in, their application hasn't been processed in a timely fashion. So there's going to be a lot of that is just attrition, but there is not a way for them to figure out who is on Medicaid. And if you're disabled, you have to have less than $2,000 in assets. So you have to be impoverished, but you're supposed to work. These people every 6 months are going to have to prove this, and they're going to have some sort of system to know who is elderly or who is disabled, who cannot work. And it's just, there's no way for that to happen. It's going to kill people. It's degrading. It's demeaning. And I want to remind people that the cruelty is the point. The cruelty is the point of this. Poor people are going to pay. Disabled people are going to die. And it is blood on the hands of the GOP and the president and the administration that they want this big, beautiful bill for billionaires that will kill poor people and it will kill disabled people.
Julie Farrar,
it's a bureaucracy.
We want to thank you so much for being with us, joining us from Albany, disability rights activists with ADAPT. Among the signs that people carried into that hearing were "our homes, not nursing homes." And for our radio audience who is just listening, if you go to democracynow.org, you'll see the footage of the wheelchair warriors who disrupted the House hearing. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The Republican plan to slash taxes on the rich. To talk about it, we're joined in Washington, D.C., by The Lever's Arjun Singh, senior producer, co-host of the podcast Lever Time, which has a series called Tax Revolt about the history of the Republican anti-tax movement. This is a trailer for the series.
From the landmark California tax revolt to Trump's latest push to cut taxes for the rich, this movement claimed to fight for the average American, but really deepened inequality and helped the rich get richer.
This is the story of how a small but powerful movement reshaped our economy, weakened our democracy, and left the government scrambling to serve the people it was meant to protect.
But that's not the way the world is, guys. Do you want to sit there and scream and holler and hate rich people and lose every election?
It is time for a wealth tax in America.
You'll lose everything. If you don't lose the election, you'll lose the country. So, there you got it. You with me?
That is a trailer for the series Tax Revolt, about the history of the Republican anti-tax movement. The Lever's Arjun Singh joins us now. Thanks, Arjun, for being with us. If you can give us the history about what we're seeing. While many call this the big, beautiful bill, the Republicans in Congress, of course, President Trump, who visited them yesterday to try to bring together all the parties to pass this, others are simply calling it the billionaire's tax cut bill. Explain where this comes from.
Thanks for having me, Amy. It's great to be with you. This bill is really the culmination of a longstanding effort of the Republican Party to pull together different coalitions that really don't have a lot in common except for being united under the banner of the anti-tax movement. In the 1970s, the Republican Party was trying to build a base out of anti-communism and being fervently anti-communist, but this was a bipartisan thing. So in 1978, after a California ballot election where conservative activists convinced Californians to cap the property tax rate, Republicans realized that tax cutting could be a very powerful force for uniting different groups that may not seem to be bedfellows with each other. And so you have different coalitions in there. You have billionaires, of course, who want their tax cuts. You have business interests who want to be able to game the tax code. But then you also have members of the Republican base, people who are legitimately anti-government in that they believe that there should be no government or an incredibly limited form of government, potentially kicked down to the states. And then you have other people who see the government as a tool of ideology that they don't agree with. And so starting with the Reagan era and into the 1990s and now, of course, into Trump, you have a very strong coalition of Republicans who genuinely believe that the government has been hijacked by an ideological force. They believe it's become too tolerant and too liberal. And so they see the tax issue as a means of actually defunding an entire federal government that they completely hate. The other parts of the coalition are people who are deficit hawks, and they have an ideological hatred of deficit spending. And so this coalition that Trump is trying to pull together is trying to please everybody. But what's awkward about this is that Trump himself has created an awkward part of the coalition that relies on a lot of government services. And what you're seeing now with his efforts to cut Medicaid, Elon Musk and Doge, is that a lot of parts of the Republican base right now not only rely on these services, they like these services, and there's no way you can please this coalition. Either you have to raise the debt ceiling, which the deficit hawks do not want, or you have to acknowledge that the government services are vital and figure out a funding mechanism. President Trump has proposed, and then he walked it back, raising taxes on millionaires, showing the strength of the anti-tax movement, or you raise taxes and you find a functioning government. But what Trump is trying to figure out right now is how do you pull these people together? They have very few votes. And it looks like they're not going to be able to pull it together. Maybe things can happen at the last hour, but currently they are very much in a fight. And this is the culmination of that effort to glue together a really strange coalition that in many ways does not get along.
But Arjun, for your series on the Lever, you also interviewed Grover Norquist, the head of the conservative advocacy group Americans for Tax Reform. What did he tell you, and why is he such an important figure?
So Grover Norquist told me that this issue comes down to one thing, freedom. And that's, I should make clear, that's freedom for him, not freedom for everybody else to be able to live in a functioning society, freedom for people not to be suppressed by corporate interests, not for the freedom of people to be able to have access to healthcare. He wants no government. And for him, the tax issue is a means of controlling the Republican Party, whipping members in line, and ultimately defunding the government. The reason Grover is really important to this story is that Americans for Tax Reform has been the backbone of the modern anti-tax movement. And he created something called the Anti-Tax Pledge, an actual pledge that elected officials can sign, where they say simply, I will never raise taxes. And using this pledge, Norquist has used it as a bludgeon to go after Republicans, most notably George Herbert Walker Bush, Bush Sr., who committed the original sin of compromising and raising taxes because he had no choice, because he had a Democratic majority. Norquist found the compromise so unacceptable that he rallied people against Bush. And he's turned this party into one where even if people want to raise taxes, President Trump is a good example, because they think that it'll advance another part of their ideological agenda, Norquist's group and his coalition has made it impossible for this party to raise taxes, which then makes it very difficult to actually govern when you're the party in power, which Republicans have been.
But now you express skepticism about their ability to pass this bill, but isn't this a bill so important in terms of Trump being able to declare a victory in his first year in office that he will pull out all stops to whip the Republican, the slim majorities in both the House and Senate into line?
I wasn't skeptical of this up until I started reporting on this series. For a long time that I've been covering politics in the era of Trump, I thought that Trump really had created a party where he was a kingmaker and the party was a cult of personality around him. This anti-tax issue might actually be the breaking point for Trump himself. Trump is trying to put himself against the anti-tax movement that has held this entire party together, has actually dominated and controlled this party. And Trump has run as an anti-tax person. But Trump also wants to please different parts of his coalition. And so I think in this case, either he needs to make cuts to Medicaid to please those people, or he needs to figure out how people are going to raise the debt ceiling. But Trump is essentially trying to pass the logic that he is Trump and people should listen to him, and that worked in his first term. And we've seen a lot of rigmarole. They only have a handful of votes that they can lose on this. So really, you only need 1 to 3 people who say, I don't want to cut Medicaid. You have a lot of representatives in actually blue liberal areas who won Republican seats, and they're afraid of their constituents. So that's why I have a little skepticism of if this bill is actually going to pass in the way that it is. I think that the coalition Trump has created, he thought that it was a coalition created around himself. We're actually seeing that it's a coalition that in many ways is self-interested. Working class voters who switch to the Republican Party lean on these services. People who work in the government lean on these services. And you're also seeing people becoming aware of connecting the dots between the Republican moves and things like not being able to access SNAP benefits, not being able to access your housing assistance. I think that's another key thing here, is that people are recognizing the connection between federal Republican policy and what they see on the ground in their states.
Arjun Singh, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Senior producer, co-host of the podcast Lever Time, which just released a series called Tax Revolt. Coming up, America's brain drain. Back in 30 seconds.
At the end. World where the factories are, there's a burning of hatred that's crossing the lines. There's a blue-eyed devil man, thinks he's king of the world. He's bully salesman selling fear. Think you are. Jesus with his hate turns man against
man. The Demagogue by Lila Downs, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. As the Trump administration slashes spending on health care and scientific research, we end today's show looking at the long-term impacts of Trump's anti-science agenda as scientists look to take their research overseas. For more, we're joined by Robert Hunsicker, environmental journalist whose new piece for Dissident Voices headlined America's Great Brain Drain. Explain exactly what this is, Robert. Thanks for being with us.
Well, it's just what it says it is. The Trump administration is chasing our scientists out of the country across the board, whether it's in the entire apparatus of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, or if it's in the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, it doesn't matter. They're firing people. They're moving them to lesser positions or moving them from, say, Baltimore to a remote location in Idaho so that they won't appreciate their job any longer. And we're having a massive drain of really the smartest, brightest people that we need to confront health problems in this country.
And they're going Robin Hunsicker. Robert, in your article, you mentioned that at the same time that the federal government is cutting funding for science, the European Union, Canada, Australia are increasing the amount of money that they're devoting to scientific research to actually lure American scientists to those countries. Can you talk about that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. President Ursula von der Leyen of the EU has dedicated another $500 million to their research agencies to bring specifically U.S. scientists, educators, and academics to the EU. President Macron of France has done the same thing, specifically to bring U.S. scientists to France. And now Germany's doing it, and now Spain has jumped on the bandwagon, and now China is doing the same thing. And they're saying for any Chinese-born or Chinese-American scientist, we're opening up an avenue for you, and we're going to provide grants and pay for you to come. So we're draining our scientific talent, and it's on the way out. You know, Nature, which is the leading journal for science in this country, did just a random poll of 1,600 respondents, and 75% of them said, we're looking to go overseas now. So we're draining one of the most valuable assets we've got in the country.
And what's the long-term impact of this brain drain? What will it be for the United States?
Well, it's going to be very, very serious when it comes to the healthcare area. If you look, for example, at the but let me give you an example of a massive misallocation of resources. And I think this is a point I really want to make. If you look at the HHS, which is the Health and Human Services Department, run by Kennedy, $1.8 trillion budget. Within that, you've got Medicare, Medicaid, those kind of things. And there's some other agencies as well that are crucial to the health of this country. For example, the FDA, Center for Disease Control, and the NIH, National Institutes of Health. Those agencies essentially are the Department of Defense for the interior of this country. They really are. They prevent epidemics and stop them once they come. They are the Department of Defense for the interior of the country, much as the Pentagon is the Department of Defense to protect enemies from raiding our country. Well, we haven't had an invasion since Pearl Harbor, and they're getting $850 billion for the Pentagon. And they want to add $100 billion, Trump does, to that. Meanwhile, let's go over and look on the interior side of defense. And what's happened here is you had 103 million people that were infected 5 years ago with COVID, and 1.2 million of those people died. But guess what? There's a miracle that happened, and that's this. The NIH, and their budget's being cut 40% by Trump, by the way, the NIH brought a vaccine within 1 year. That had never happened before. The fastest vaccine had ever been brought to this country previously was in the 1960s for mumps, and it took 4 years. So you want to cut the agency that saved literally millions of lives by bringing this vaccine within a record time of 1 year. You want to cut them by 40%. And you're thinking about maybe adding another $100 billion to an $850 billion budget where we haven't had one enemy attack to this country since Pearl Harbor. I think that, you know, this is like going down the rabbit hole and having lunch with the Mad Hatter. That's how insane this has become.
Let me ask you, Robert, the Trump administration charged the highly skilled Harvard scientist, Ksenia Petrova, with criminal felony smuggling charges for failing to declare frog samples when she returned to the U.S. in February, usually seen as a minor infraction. She has been detained in an ICE jail in Louisiana and says she faces political persecution if deported to Russia over a protest against the invasion of Ukraine. Her work could lead to major advances in early cancer detection. If you can talk about what message is being sent by Ksenia's detention, the message to scientists, the students that are being detained around the country, the message to international students coming here, that they might not only be deported, but imprisoned.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty horrible message, isn't it? I mean, that's the only way to look at it. And it's really, I guess you just got to say we're at the point where this is kind of the epitome of fascism. You know, you look at Huxley's Brave New World, and I'll just read a quick little quickie sentence. But truth's a menace. Science is a public danger. Science is a public danger. Science is a public danger because it seeks the truth. And here's an administration that can't handle seeking the truth. And the circumstance you just talked about is all about that, isn't it?
And your sense, your advice to scientists who are now facing recruitment efforts of Europe and Canada and Australia and versus the cuts of the Trump administration?
Well, I don't think they have any choice. They've got to take these grants. Their current positions are being demolished. When you take a 40% haircut for the National Institutes of Health, which is the crown jewel of biomedical research in the United States, it's the crown jewel, 99% of the drugs that are approved by the FDA come directly as a result of the National Institutes of Health. And we have fired thousands of scientists there already, demoted the key people. They're going to head out and go to Europe. You know, if we had a pandemic tomorrow, think of the issue we'd be in. And there's some of the fired employees who remain anonymous have said, if we have another pandemic, we're screwed.
And not to mention Russia, China, I think Australia talked about the Great America brain drain as the Great America brain gain for other countries.
And that's exactly what it is. It's a brain gain for China, for Spain, for France, for Germany, on and go. Oh, and Canada, too. And by the way, also Australia. So they're all jumping on the bandwagon. And I guess we'll just have a dumbed down society. That's where we're headed. And I'm not so sure, but with certain segments of it aren't already right there already.
I want to thank you so much for being with us, Robert Hunsaker. We are going to link to your piece for Dissident Voice, America's Great Brain Drain, as well as your other articles around the issue of the climate catastrophe. That does it for our broadcast. Happy birthday to Tamari Astudio. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a director of technology as well as a director of audience. You can learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warren, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Our studio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Honey Masood, Anjali Kamat, Safwat Nazal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Ozbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Torrietti, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. By the way, Buffy, happy, happy birthday. If you want to sign up for our daily digest, our newsletter, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan.